In the city, we gon' slide, bet I be there pronto.
Me, my guys, we really lie. Lord, forgive me, pay my tithes. Please don't have me reach inside, and that's in the console. Keep the semi when I ride, lit off Henny when I drive. In the city, we gon' slide, bet I be there pronto.
Chopped up and never slopped up. It is the Chop Up. It's your boy George Lee, aka The Conscious Lee. Don't forget the Lee, theconsciouslee.com, where you can find me at, man. Shout out to all my Oklahomies that's dealing with the aftermath of tornadoes, man. Who I'm with?
Hey, it's your girl TG. Happy to be with y'all on this May the 5th. We pushing through to, I say it every week, but we pushing through this year, and it's wild to me. Canada's in the building. I saw that in the comments. Shout out to y'all. Shout out to everybody across the United States. Shout out to everybody around the world. Listen, we have literally we have international listeners. And I also found out that we are on Good Pods. I've never been on Good Pods before, but we got a stellar review from a good friend of ours, a new friend of the show that we have called Common Leaders is the name of the platform that found us on Good Pods. So you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts. You can listen to us on Spotify, Blog Talk Radio. And Good Pod, and that's apparently where you can find some other Good Pods. So go check them out over there. Go check us out over there. Hey, it's good to be here, Toya G at Toya G. We with one more person.
What's good? I am Damo, the political plug. Y'all know what's up. Very interesting conversation today. I'm actually ready to go ahead and get into it. So go ahead, let's get it cracking.
Yeah, hey, going on and jumping right into it. We know that there's been a lot of talk about high quality men, high quality women. Being 35 with kids and, you know, being damaged goods. We know Kevin Samuels has been a very polarizing individual in our social media worlds on these internet streets, really for forever, but definitely since the pandemic, when he kind of proliferated and got shared this, that, and the other. We know that today there was some breaking news that he was allegedly found,
unresponsive.
Yeah, unresponsive. We haven't seen any major platforms confirm his death, but we know that based off of just what's been happening and people talking about Kevin Samuels, there's already been a flow of tweets, Instagram posts, TikTok videos. I'm curious. First, do y'all think he really did?
My opinion is no. And the reason why I'm going to say no for right now is that I looked two places to verify and confirm this information. I first looked at TMZ. TMZ ain't said nothing. The second place I look for confirmation is on the Shade Room. And what I find really interesting, and we'll talk about Delvin's comment in a second, but what I find really interesting is that the Shade Room is working very hard to be a reputable news source. So they're not even getting into the back and forth of the speculation of the mites, the maybes, whatever. And I actually commend them from that. They've been doing a lot of investigative reporting. They've been doing a lot of, you know, just a plethora of topics and subject areas and content. And so I really think they're striving to be a little bit more top tier in terms of just Black news and media sources, regardless of the type of content they share all day. So it's to be known, it's to be seen, but I'm not really sure. And I have heard that there have been Facebook posts and different people getting on lives and saying stuff, but no way to confirm those informations, best friends. All right. So I just don't know. I'm going to wait for those two sources to say what's up and let me know from there.
So to clear up this question, we're hearing a lot of, it's a few people who don't know who Kevin Samuels is, because I think Kimya has it correct. Kevin Samuels is very Black famous. Okay.
Yes.
Kevin Samuels is a social media personality who makes content centered around what he frames as high value men and the type of women who are acceptable for high value men. Essentially, that was the nomenclature that he introduced.
And vice versa. We'll be fair. He criticizes men as well, because I know a lot of people are like, you make it seem like it's only about high quality men and women. Right. But he also chastises men for not really working up to the potential of the types of men and relationships they want to.
Now, while Kevin Samuels was known in certain YouTube circles for quite a while, he really didn't become more mainstream Instagram famous until a few of his clips went viral when he would rank women. So he would have people come onto his panels, and he would rank in certain instances. This wasn't all of his content, like so you say. We got people like that ain't all he did. It wasn't all of his content, but what allowed for Kevin Samuels to get the national recognition, big name recognition, is he went viral critiquing women, ranking them based on a number, being very blunt with how he felt they would be deemed as either attractive or unattractive. And so he became known as someone who was very misogynistic in his approach to relationships and how women should be seen and how they should portray themselves. And so it was really one of them things that he was real niche. He was real niche. Like you had to be, you know what I'm saying, somebody that was invested in those conversations to really understand who Kevin Samuels was.
Right. He wrote the Bible Fresh and Fit.
Right. And they just took it and ran with it. And then I don't know if y'all seen the video of Fresh and Fit when they got wrecked by these white people. They went on their shows talking wild and ate them for lunch.
Man, he got his man.
It was great.
That's
another there.
That's what he got happen, man.
So that that playbook is what's called on social media spaces. It's what's called the Black Manosphere. There was recently an article that came out to kind of discuss some of the upsetting views that the Black Manosphere holds when it comes to specifically Black women. And so I don't really know any of them dudes because I don't really engage in a lot of them conversations. Kevin Samuels was really the only name that I really knew that came out of those circles. Right. But essentially, that's how he was known. His relationship with the Manosphere and with larger social media had to do with how he framed Black women specifically. That's what got him.
But I mean, a lot of speculation around his death. I guess, I mean, I don't know. And there were some comments there was something in the comments, and I missed it, but it was a little bit shady. And it was early on. We had even mentioned Kevin Samuels in the beginning of the show. I'm trying to find it. Oh, yeah. Shakti said Kevin Samuels died alone and unmarried. And it makes me want to think about something, George, if I can just kind of lean into this part of the conversation. Because another comment said, damn, he ain't even cold yet. And so that's been the larger sentiment on Twitter, is a lot of back and forths about how we talk about the dead. Right. And so what do y'all think is a limit and a line? Or do you feel like if you did terrible, terrible things in your life, then, you know what I'm saying, you open yourself up to getting rained on and shitted on in your death? Like, what is y'all's take on how the level of sensitivity we need to have in these moments? Like, is it a cold for you, or are you just like,
man, I try to have a little decorum and show my humanity and be a person of principle, not pressure, and I always try to, you know, have respect for human life and this, that, and the other. But being somebody from the hood, I feel like though this saying was always put in a particular instance, I think that it applies here, and I'll explain. We all heard you live by the gun, you die by the gun. To me, that saying just says that you're gonna always be responsible for what you put out in the world. It's gonna come back to you one way or another. And I just see it kind of as being the same thing as, you know, shit, I can't spit on you in real life. And then when I die, expect for you not to, you know what I'm saying, return that favor on me. You feel me? That's really how I see it. I know as a Black man, I try to, you feel me? Like I didn't care for Kevin Samuels. I thought that he did a lot of sucker shit, you know what I'm saying, me personally. But I feel like how I was raised is not to really try to, you know, talk down somebody in terms of death. And even though I didn't like him or his principles or his values, I know that he had a family, and I don't know if his family really rocked with his values and no shit like that. So I try to keep it in mind and give him the benefit of the doubt in many ways, and some because he Black, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, I don't have no disdain against no other people talking shit about him, especially Black women. And, you know what I'm saying, being the sucker, you know what I mean, that he was. So it is what it is. It's unfortunate, but you know.
So I'm a superstitious nigga. I'm a superstitious nigga. I don't think you should talk about I don't think you should speak ill of the dead, specifically like really celebrating their death, because that's something that we all gonna have to deal with. It's like making fun of old people. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you talk shit about you know, getting to a place where you hope that you will be, like, if you want to live a long life, right? Right. So knowing that death is something that comes to us all is really not something to be played with or celebrated, because we all gonna have to, you know what I'm saying, ring that bell at some point. But where I do run into issues with that sentiment, and so in case there's any clarity that's needed, it's like, no, I don't condone celebrating death of people that I disagree with, or people that I think are bad for the community, or people that I think are bad for the world, right? It's not my job.
That's why I know we're different. For me and you, it's like,
but listen, this is what I'm saying. I say that because I'm superstitious, right? But under scrutiny, though, I may prove myself to be a liar. I say that, like, if I'm because the thing about Kevin Samuels is, because I'm not a woman, even though I was, I felt what he said was disrespectful to Black people as a whole, because that orientation towards Black women is counterproductive to Black communities. I can't say that you know what I heard was enough to be like, yes, he did, right? But are there people who have had a certain impact on the world that, if I'm really pressed on, it's like, bro, you ain't, if you was a person at this time, you wouldn't have been happy about. And I think what I take it back to is, and this is an extreme example, I'm not comparing the people who are celebrating the death of Kevin Samuels to slaves or enslaved Africans. However, when the slave master died, the enslaved Africans celebrated. And so I think what George is speaking to specifically is that while generally, like, on practice, I don't go around being happy that people have died, regardless of what, you know, what opposing ideological spectrum or side of the spectrum we were on.
Sure.
There may be some circumstances that I could experience that I haven't experienced up until this point that would make me feel that way. Or if you're looking at examples of, like, these things happening, like the analogy of the slaves and the enslaved African and the slave master, I could see where that happens. And so the issue with Kevin Samuels is, when you become an icon, when you leave, the only thing that's left is your legacy. Not who you were.
Was plantation patriarchy.
And this is what I want to start asking a question about, because Chaz has been tickling me in these comments in a couple of different times, in a couple of different places. But Chaz asked the question. So we're supposed to rewrite a narrative because someone dies? And I think that is the question that is at stake when we have these types of conversations. It's what makes people uncomfortable about going to funerals sometimes, because we're about to sit in here for the next 2 hours and hear you know what I'm saying, talk and wax poetic about somebody who I know for the fact live completely contrary to what, you know what I'm saying, you're giving. And so on a real life day-to-day level, not just with celebrities or pseudo celebrities or people who we have on public platforms, we have to make these types of decisions every single day. How do we confront in death, you know what I'm saying, somebody who is complete trash in life? And do like Chaz was asking, rewrite that narrative? Do we grant them that just because they died?
Chaz didn't hit the nail in the.
No, but that's what I'm saying. We're not. The question isn't.
I don't know if y'all saw this, but he. I mean, they. I apologize. So apologize, Chaz. They justified the connection you made to slavery. Dominique was like.
I mean, he wasn't my sister. I don't think that is a gross, bad. You know what I'm saying? Characterization. Like, I would agree with that analysis. Like, he kind of was enslaving the monster. But this is how I see it, though. And kind of how, like, American international politics has taught me from an American perspective. One person's patriot is another person's terrorist.
Yeah.
And when we look at it through that lens, we're going to always celebrate when we think a terrorist is dying. And we're going to always, you feel me, be sad and or celebrate for different reasons the life of a hero. For some people, Kevin Samuels was a hero. He empowered them. He made them feel like, you feel me? They could be like a high quality man, make them feel like he was being truthful. He was preaching. He was holding people accountable. And some people that felt like what he spewed was bullshit. That was dehumanizing. That was immoral. That was unethical. And that was just false. And to me, I think that's just kind of where like, depending on where you lay it, you think he was a hero? Because also the last thing I say on this right now is, think about it right now, how social media is. Folks can be seen as a martyr. And make it where, because If he died, you feel me? If he is gone, the time that he is gone, in my mind, is just like solidifies the legend of Kevin Samuels. You feel me? Almost emboldens his support group.
Toya, you're moving too fast. Toya, you're moving too fast. But let's start here. Let's start here. Destiny X said, if he was an old white man who was racist, what would the perspective be? And that's why I said, off break, I genuinely say that's not disrespect the dead, but under scrutiny, I will be considered a liar.
I think the thing that is really catching me right here, and I apologize if I cut you off in the direction that this is not going in, but I think the thing that gets me here is our inability, like this question, we know if it was a white racist old man, we'd be like, nigga, it's nothing, forget you, whatever, don't care about, because a lot of people like the family, but what about the family? We wouldn't care about none of that. But when it comes to black women, it always seems like the math gets a little bit different in inexplicable ways when it comes to the way that black women are hurt in some situations or how they want to. I just want to acknowledge that tension that it's always like, boy, we don't got to be like that. Or, well, what about this? There's always conditional outrage that we are granted. But if it was a racist white man, then of course, then all those rules go out the window. The math is completely different. And I think this is where we have to start really thinking about the separations and the dichotomizations and the all the nonsense that we play into when it comes to violence that happens to black women. But I just something about that.
Shout out to my boy Trey. Hey, hopefully y'all Oklahoma boys staying safe in these tornadoes. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think Trey in Oklahoma, though. I think Trey might be in
Trey in Oklahoma. Or, yeah, all right, Trey. But shout out to him, though.
Shout out
to
family, though. Definitely, you know what I'm saying? Trey, you know
what I'm saying? Yeah, for sure. Neek the Greatness said, I'm not putting sugar on shit. And that's why I want to make a distinction, though, right? Because the conversation is more so, how do we talk about the fact that they gone? Not about romanticizing their legacy.
Not right? About romanticizing or sanitizing or making them better than what they was, but it's just like, hey.
Right, because the issue, like I said, we all, death is not something that's unique to any one individual. And since it's all something that we're going to experience, I don't think it's something that should be celebrated, right? It should be, you know what I mean? It has its role in life. But that question, like that thing, I, like you said, Toya, when it comes to black women, it's always some extra math. So when I take my, superstition, like you may be late. We already talked about how he talked about both genders. You may be late. That's cool. We get shout out to the Kevin Samuels stans that can't really keep on the conversation. This may not be the show for you if you're a Kevin Samuels stan. You may want to come back when we on some other shit. However, when Toya talks about the math always being different when it comes to black women, I can't if I'm not fixing my lips when I see somebody celebrating the death. For example, because I think this is a good parallel, Rush Limbaugh died recently. For those who know who Rush Limbaugh is,
I think Madeleine Albright died recently too.
Madeleine Albright did die recently. It was Madeleine Albright. Show
we talked about when George Bush's dad died, and I feel like you know what I'm saying, we see that you know just with certain men of stature, especially when they white. It's just a certain reserve they get for being down. Like you got to reserve your criticisms and the shortcomings and the things that we don't like they did. We got to hold it back. I remember people was mad that people brought up what George Bush did during the AIDS pandemic, what George Bush did for the war on drugs, what George Bush said then. You feel me? People was mad. I'm talking about George Bush dad, George Bush.
George Herbert Walker Bush, George H.W., the first Bush. We had a conversation about you know how and I think all three of us was completely unapologetic. Like we're not going to stop talking about your legacy.
Yeah.
Because you know what I'm saying.
And for the people that's LeBrain and Scales, my response for you and people that's saying this, and this is very like very respectfully. When we criticize like Candace Owens and Blexit, majority black people are a part of her organization. It doesn't take away from my criticism of what she's doing. So you point out that Kevin Samuels majority had women that were calling in. It doesn't take away from my criticisms in how he oriented himself towards women, how he talked to women, and the type of aha gotcha moments he put women in. It doesn't negate that. You see what I'm saying? It's like it doesn't negate that Candace Owens and the Blexit movement is an anti-black movement that literally tries to have individual gain off of anti-black dispositions. Like none of, all those things is true. You feel me?
I gotta interrupt you real quick. I gotta interrupt you. Tarot destroy you. I gotta put you in timeout. Because the one thing we're not going to do is we're going to have this conversation. We're going to talk about Roe v. Wade, but the one thing we're not going to do.
And let me help some of that math real quick. Let me help some of that math real quick, because I wrote down this statistic specifically in writing some notes for this. That's 19 million unborn black babies. The total amount in that same 50-year time span was 63 million. So what color were the rest of the children? It's not only black women having abortions. Let's do the math. That is a piece of the puzzle. That's a piece of the conversation. But 63 million babies were aborted overall. So that 19 million, let's think about the services that were rendered to people in the public in general. Let's not make a spectacularization of black women in the services they decided to participate.
Get that off the screen, bro.
So that's just me.
Cause I mean, and as we and real quick, I'm gonna say this, and then George, you could go ahead in the snapshot. As we transition over to talk about Roe v. Wade, the one thing we not gonna do is we're not going to allow any of this conversation to be situated, the conversation of abortion, Roe v. Wade, whatever, to be situated in any type of accusations of black women being murderers because of this conversation. Yeah. We're not allowing that. Freedom of speech is something that you get from the government. We ain't got to put up with your bullshit.
Oh, God.
And we're not going to put up with the bullshit. Y'all can do that shit on other places on YouTube. But the conversation of murderers, y'all not about to get that off over here. I ain't playing them games. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, man. We know that intersectionality is so real, and everything that we talk about is usually interconnected and intersected. You see what I'm saying? Education is elevation. We know that depending on what side of the aisle you on, you feel like, you know, you might be mourning the death of Kevin Samuels, and depending on what side of the aisle on, you might be feeling like, you know, the death of Kevin Samuels is something that you want to go grab some sparklers for. We know that regardless of how you feel about, Kevin Samuels, it's very important to recognize that the shit you leave or the scent you leave with people is always going to be what they smell when they think about you. And if it stank, and they nose turn up, then you feel me? It is what it is, man. We know that us that grew up in the 90s or grew up in the early 2000s, we know that in the early in late 90s, they always said shit like live by the gun, die by the gun. You're responsible for the energy you put off in the universe, this, that, and the other. If people feel like you full of shit when you alive, they probably gonna feel like you full of shit when you dead too.
Yeah.
If people feel like you are, you know what I'm saying, a saint when you alive, they probably gonna think you a saint when you dead too. That's all I gotta say with that. Rolling into the next one, education is elevation. About to get into this Roe v. Wade. I hope that this conversation allows for a lot of people to learn from not only the political process, but also learn about just the historical implications of abortion in our country. And we're gonna get into a lot of how a lot of people kind of get into the anti-abortion shit. You don't realize where it come from. And I listen, before we get into the conversation, I just said the last thing. I was born and raised down south. I've only lived down south in the Bible Belt. I've only lived around environments that was structured by being against abortion. I ain't never lived nowhere that was for abortion. I've always lived in places that was against it. Keep that in mind when we had this conversation.
Yeah.
I think Destiny X is making a pretty specific point as well, and that's I don't say rest in peace for everybody.
Yeah,
actually. Okay. So y'all want to get into the snapshot, or y'all want to get to the political chop next? Or y'all want to do the culture chop? How y'all want to do it?
Roe v. Wade.
Culture chop, or because both of them Roe v. Wade. I got it. Political chop. Let's get into it. Yeah, let's do it. So I guess it's good to start the political chop here, because essentially all of this came out due to this conversation is relevant due to a leak. I do want to be clear. We're not talking about any specific action that has taken place as it pertains to Roe v. Wade, but what we received this week was a leak of a draft of a decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. To overturn Roe v. Wade. It's very interesting. The first thing that makes this interesting to get into it, Roe v. Wade was a Supreme Court decision that had decided that the ability to outright ban abortions was unconstitutional because it was a overreach of government and how it clashed with personal rights, right? Personal autonomy, right? Mm-hmm. So the Roe v. Wade standing in our laws has made it more difficult for certain states to outright ban abortions. Now we know that in order for the legal system to work properly, you have to have the right people in place. So there are places like Texas, for example, who have saturated their government with the types of people who pretend to care about the Constitution, but don't really care about the Constitution. And they found ways, creative ways, to create certain abortion bans that haven't yet been challenged in the Supreme Court. But with this leak coming out, right, which is something that's typically unprecedented. When we have these drafts that take place, they are usually only circulated within very tight circles within the Supreme Court. So the last time a draft was leaked, can y'all guess?
Roe v. Wade.
Roe v. Wade.
Yes.
I didn't know that. I just guessed.
Right? You're not wrong. Usually when somebody asks, can you guess? This is very obvious. The last time the decision over Roe v. Wade was the last time that there was a leak. Actually, this is a little bit of a political trivia for y'all. If you can think of any of the famous Supreme Court cases, specifically got to do with black people, another Supreme Court case was leaked. A draft.
Not Brown.
Older than that.
Plessy versus Ferguson.
Dred Scott.
Dred Scott was reading. God damn, what they need to go on and say? What's up? Hey, man, that nigga,
I wouldn't be here when this shit come out if I was you, big dog. That's how that shit was leaked.
Yeah. But
essentially, what has taken place is somebody thought that the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade was so significant that they literally risked their freedom and their political careers to be able to get this information out. The response about this from political leaders, specifically conservative leaders, has been to call into question whether or not the autonomy of the Supreme Court has been maintained.
Sure.
Real quick, I hate to do this to y'all, but real quick, a little bit of, you know what I'm saying, social studies. Three branches of government, the co-equal branches of government, are considered to be autonomous. That means that they operate independently of each other. Congress operates independently of the executive branch. The executive branch operates independently of the Supreme Court. And it goes around
that way. Executive, judicial.
Right. Now, a punk conservative, we're going to keep it a stat. Conservatives have been straight up saying that because this got leaked, it undermines the autonomy of the Supreme Court, because now the decisions made by the Supreme Court are going to be susceptible to public opinion, because typically these decisions to overturn or to decide are done internally, and we don't hear about it until after the decision has been made. So conservative leaders like Mitch McConnell, conservative leaders like Mike McCarthy, No, his name is McCarthy. Mike McCarthy is the coach of the he's the minority leader McCarthy. I don't really know his first name. But pretty much the what they're saying is that this leak undermines the autonomy of the Supreme Court, because now the Supreme Court is now susceptible to public opinion. Sure. Given what's the serious nature of Roe v. Wade, do y'all think that it was to the detriment or to the benefit of our rights as people and how the Constitution protects the Kevin McCarthy? Thank you, Kevin. Of course, Kevin would know.
Kevin, thank you, Kevin. Good to see you. His name is Kevin.
Yeah.
But given, and I straight up said Mike, and I hate the Cowboys. I don't know why I said Mike McCarthy.
Hey,
but
on the Cowboys name, man. God
we
damn.
We won't.
But given the claims that's being made about undermining the autonomy, I think that it was a good thing that this leak took place and that it's possible to put public pressure on the Supreme Court to make sure that this doesn't happen.
I think that it was a good thing for our rights, but it shows you that that the autonomy of the branches of government is in opposition to the general welfare of the people. And we recognize that even from a constitutionalist standpoint, that there has always been competing interpretations on what the Constitution should be doing and how it should evolve. And I would argue that a lot of what Mitch McConnell and them are trying to preserve, you know, they're conservatives because they're conserving the Constitution. People that don't know, even when people conservatives say they're conservatives, they're conserving the Constitution in theory, quote unquote, right? I would argue that a lot of them do it in bad faith because it's like, hey, a lot of those quote unquote founding fathers say it's supposed to be a breathing document, it's supposed to be changing. You're trying to hold on to the old archaic interpretations of the Constitution to be able to justify gatekeeping that says that we're going to have internal decisions, big decisions made, and then we're going to let the public deal with them because really the public is generally stupid and dumb. I think that that's a part of the conversation. I think that a lot of, at least on social media, how it happens in terms of politics, to me, I probably don't. To me, it's always like the Republicans think this, liberals think this, I mean, Democrats think this. And to me, I feel like it's never like, I think both of y'all are full of shit because of how y'all interpreting this is stuck in a very old bipartisan way where you ain't even, those liberals and those conservatives weren't thinking about women. Yeah. So you hold on to those old political, you know what I'm saying, views to say, hey, this is how I'm going to think. This is how I think the process should go. To me, it's just like, hey, what are you doing? Hey, and Terry Destroyer, I think that you have you.
No, that was fine. They right, troll.
You going out your way, giving this time, effort, and energy. I appreciate you helping the algorithm. You know what I'm saying? Just like Mitch McConnell and them and a whole bunch of naysayers and trolls. Sometimes when you put your effort in certain things, you don't realize that you're not only doing yourself a disservice, that you actually servicing the people that you don't really recognize. And it's like, y'all don't want voter turnout. You don't want voter turnout. That's what last thing I said on this rant. You don't want voter turnout. You gonna get
So in terms of the autonomy of the Supreme Court and whether or not this particular instance has really started to challenge and threaten that, I think it's cooked. The Supreme Court has been unraveling in very problematic ways, I think, since Donald Trump, right, was able to influence it in such prolific ways and really politicize it in ways that, you know, we knew was there, right? We knew that there were conservative and liberal splits. We knew that people had their own orientation toward politics that informed how they were credible enough to even be on. Like, we knew that that was a part of it. But I think starting with the Donald Trump era up to now, that particular, the autonomy that the Supreme Court has been, to me, manipulated and abused so wildly that it's really rough to even, A, see them as autonomous, because it all bleeds in and bleeds over. It's been overly politicized with the way that Barack Obama was blocked from being able to nominate his justice because of the pissed off nature of the Republican Party and how they really wanted to stick it to and set up a great trajectory for who they didn't even know was going to be Donald Trump. But then, of course, you have this charismatic, crazy ass person who's willing to go balls to the wall to make sure
he satisfies
his conservative agenda. So just make it like it's already been politicized. You know what I'm saying? This has been in the making. This has been years in the making. And this is what frustrates me about the Democratic Party, is that they don't have the gall or the foresight. They don't have the six-step ahead plan and orientation, I feel like, toward making sure that conservative power is here in the same ways that the Democrat, like, they're not matching energy, is what I'm ultimately saying. And so when we talk about the autonomy of that particular court, I think we see everything from, you know, you already have, just by nature of the Supreme Court, the ability, they dictate and determine impeachments, right? They dictate and determine major decisions that, you know, are both private and quiet and that we don't hear about and listen about, but set precedences for so many things in our lives, up to these types of conversations where you have nine justices able to make a decision about some shit that the vast majority of Americans, based on polling information, based on just a lot of data and statistics, do not want. Like, the vast majority of Americans have no interest in completely wholesale eradicating abortion out from access. We have certain pockets of places that want to change and limit and go very far in their limitations, but the public consciousness overwhelmingly is like, yes, if you have a type of pregnancy that's violent to you, if you have a rape situation, a lot of people want that ability to have that type of service or whatever. So you have 9 people being able to just say fuck millions of people. It's just wild to me.
Wow.
And so that autonomy and being subject to public opinion, like I say all this to say, I think that that separation, the degrees of separation were lost a long time ago. And now we're seeing the cracks and crevices. They can't even motivate themselves. They have opted themselves out of investigating themselves for January 6th.
Okay. Hey, and,
like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what? Like, stop playing. Autonomous? Not don't want to be subject to public opinion. They shield themselves when they want to. They open themselves up to it in other times when they want to. Why? Because they know when it's all said and done, they suffer nothing.
Because the caveat is that George, I mean, Donald, is really important. Right now, the conservatives showing their hands so much where we see that this leak informality is mm-hmm. having more weight than Justice Clarence Thomas' wife sending a text to overthrow the thing. Like literally. So
that's why it's my dog.
The autonomy of Congress is more important than the somebody in Congress colluding to literally overthrow the government. Also, just to add to what Toya said, though, because you know what I'm saying, I know Don about to add into this. Shout out to Dash Dobfrisky. You feel me? Off Twitter, you know what I'm saying? He's a student at UCLA, and this man got a popping ass thread that's gonna add more context to what Toya is saying. So y'all know we ain't just some niggas that's just mad and mad at the government. He said, my professor at UCLA told our class that the worst part of the SCOTUS story, and for y'all that don't know, when people say SCOTUS, they're talking about the Supreme Court of the United States. A lot of people be throwing around this. I realized this when I ain't gonna say the name. One of my family members asked me, like, "Little George, what the hell does SCOTUS mean?" I had to tell him. But listen, my professor at UCLA told our class the worst part of SCOTUS' story was the fact that someone leaked the draft opinion. I raised my hand and told her the worst part was that women's rights are being taken away and that the person who leaked it, the draft, was a hero. Then she responded by saying, "A hero? ? The individual undermined the integrity in the institution of the court." To which I responded, "The court lost its integrity when the wife of Scottish Justice texts Mark Meadows on a plan on how to unlawfully overturn the election." Then this shit got spicy, right? Then she said, "Let's not get into the political gossip." To which I said, "Dash said it's not political gossip. It's documented text that Clarence Thomas' wife ran about left wing heist, even though the election
is stolen." How did they get it? It's not political gossip when they got those texts through a investigation done by a congressional committee. Come on, that's not gossip.
Congressional committee. But listen though, yeah. Dash, a white boy, white man, you a cold motherfucker. How you put this together? Because then you kept on tweeting. You said, she said, "I'm not here to discuss political opinions. I'm just professing that today is a dark day for the judicial court as an institution." Which Dash concluded, "No, it's a dark day for women in America who just lost their reproductive freedoms. It's a safe to say my grade would take a hit for disagreeing with her so passionately and morally, but I felt I need to speak up. I'm a student at UCLA who's disgusted by what the Republicans are doing to this country. By the way, when Republicans claim schools are indoctrinating students, it's a lie. Most of these teachers have had afraid to take political stands due to GOP's war on education, afraid to say anything about Trump or the GOP, even after they incited a violent insurrection." Mm-hmm. But this is not about politics. This is about democracy, justice, and human rights. "Thank you for listening to my rant. I encourage young people to always speak out. I know it may feel like your voice isn't heard, but you may have the power to change the world because you are the future. And vote in November. Don't sit this one out. Everybody in line, Republicans, y'all better get to Jerry and redistricting. I know y'all already been doing shit anyway, but y'all better get to work, goddamn it, because y'all are working, man."
No. This is great. That's a wonderful tweet. That's a wonderful tweet because
I'm post it to the top of the page too. I'm trying to the top of the page.
You should
hold on. And my cousin. All right, my cousin gonna be in town.
All right,
my fault. A cousin I ain't seen in a minute just said they was gonna be in town, so I'm gonna respond to that when I'm done. However, let's address this though, right? Because this is the issue. Somebody will tell you that the autonomy of the court was undermined when this leak came out, right? Mm-hmm. But they won't say that the autonomy of the Supreme Court was undermined when Barack Obama could not get a Supreme Court justice during an election year. Mm-hmm. But Donald Trump could get a Supreme Court justice during an election year. You can't talk to me about the Supreme Court being autonomous from political opinions when it's already been co-opted due to conservative judicial activism. Now, the term judicial activism is used to apply to judicial decisions that are specifically, unequivocally partisan. They're doing it for a reason. Overturning Roe v. Wade is not a social ill. People are not hitting the streets to say, hey, we need to overturn Roe v. Wade. It is judicial activism. It is the infiltration of radical conservative politics that allows the Supreme Court to even consider the idea of overturning Roe v. Wade. So when we are sitting back and seeing that conservatives have manipulated the system to allow themselves to put people in position, people who lied, by the way, for example, Brett Kavanaugh specifically stated that Roe v. Wade is stare decisis, meaning the fact that it is established law means that it should be left alone. Neil Gorsuch said the same exact thing to Dianne Feinstein. Mm-hmm. So now we have to remember the decision to allow these people onto the Supreme Court was dependent upon the meetings that they had with the people from the Judicial Committee who would be the individuals who would be voting on them being in the Supreme Court in the first place.
Right.
Roe v. Wade being decided was one of the factors that people wanted to know about.
Exactly.
So now we're crying and complaining about the autonomy of the court when we've just sat there and allowed conservative politicians to make sure that conservatism dictate or I guess conservatism as they see it today dictates how the Constitution is being interpreted, not how it's been interpreted throughout time. To even overturn Roe v. Wade undermines the autonomy of the decision that was made back then, because they're saying now that we have the power to overturn it, we'll overturn it. Not we're going to overturn it because there's an issue that was being brought up. Not we're going to overturn it because there's public outcry that's asking and demanding us to take a look at it. But solely because we now have the power to do it. Radical conservatism, and we're going to get to this next question, ushered in by Donald Trump, undermined the autonomy of the court. Not the person that leaked it. But the next question that I want to ask y'all now is, did we underestimate the impact that Donald Trump would leave on our government and this country? Remember, he got three Supreme Court justices. Brett Kavanaugh, Neil Gorsuch was supposed to be a Obama nominee. But because Republicans had control of Congress and refused to vote on a Obama nominee because it was a election season, what we saw was Neil Gorsuch ended up being brought into the Supreme Court by the Trump administration. Then you had the death of Antonin Scalia.
I won't speak for nobody else. I think that if I'm putting my educator hat, when you ask the question, did we underestimate Trump's presidency? It depends on what the we talking about. But I say for me, I would say I underestimated it. I would say that I underestimated Trump's presidency, especially when I think about Trump's 4 years presidency compared to Obama's 8 year presidency, and thinking about the legacy in terms of the impact, the residue. I think that if this Roe v. Wade is overturned, we'll see what that means. But I also think that that there's a lot of implications in there, because we also see that once I learned that Barack Obama was trying to get RBG or RGB, whatever her name was, to sit down, but she didn't want to. And seeing how also that also allowed for her to die and Trump to fill that position when he was in office, I think that there's also a lot, you know what I'm saying, at play. But I definitely will admit that I underestimated, you feel me, the presidency of Trump, and underestimated the impact of what it would have in terms of this motherfucker ain't even in office no more. But we still seeing the decisions that he made from 2016 to 2020 is impacting us in 2022.
Go ahead, Toya.
Well, I don't, because I don't disagree with Lee at all. I want to take a moment, though, when we talk about underestimating things. Of course, we underestimated what this, the apprentice leader and host, this hotel conglomerate, this businessman was going to do, and how it was going to completely shift the trajectory of this country for the next 25 to 50 years. Yes, we underestimated that. But I want to double down on the Obama era and how we, I think, underestimated the legacy and the lack of the amount of stones unturned with his presidency, because of what we have to understand about Roe versus Wade is, if I'm not mistaken, there was an opportunity for him to codify that into law that he decided not to do, right? A decision that was made when we had a majority from the presidency on down, right? And I even think we had a Supreme Court majority, right? And so I think there was an opportunity for Barack Obama to codify Roe versus Wade into law and to make abortions federally legal across the country. And that didn't happen. So when we start to talk about and really look back and start to tease out what we misdetermined or misunderstood or underestimated, I think we also underestimated some of the doors that was left open, the same way the RGB door was left open and decisions were unmade there. The same, like, there were just a lot of, like you said, that 4 year to 8 year comparison. And start every time something else happens, every time another shoe drops, you'd be like, well, let's go ahead and trace it all the way back. And we get to this, these